student, popular football player, evil child molester.
We find the defendant guilty.
I've never woken up in the morning and wondered, did we get the wrong guy?
This trial was a sham.
There's been an outcry.
He's a liar.
He's a great guy.
He was absolutely guilty.
They got it wrong.
Initially, I was pretty convinced of his innocence. Now I wouldn't be surprised either way.
Welcome back to a special quarantine edition.
We got a real special guest.
What's up with you, Brody? With the virtual handshake.
I'm gonna tell y'all something that I never told nobody.
I want all the smoke.
Welcome back to another quarantine edition of All the Smoke. I'm excited about this one.
This is the A-list edition.
Like, I mean, I think we outdid ourselves here, Jack. Shit.
Yeah, man, I can't believe it. I mean, go ahead and just introduce me, man. Let's get this shit started.
You can't even spit that shit out. I know you excited.
I can't even get it out. I ain't got to lick my lips or nothing. My shit ain't mashed. I'm ready to go.
That nigga ready to go? All right, man, welcome. One of the greatest, hottest actors of our generation. Groundbreaking musician, jack of all trades, if you don't mind me using that term. Welcome, Jamie Foxx. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, man, come on, man. You ain't got to do all that, man. We homies, man.
Yeah, but hold on. We got to. The rest of the world got to know, man.
You left out Super Party Thrower.
Man, what?
Left that shit out. Come on, man.
I still got chicks I talked to that I met at your party. What was that, 10 years ago? How long ago was that?
Ten years ago? It don't matter. About 10 years ago, you know, and you came in all the smooth, you're the light-skinned, smooth-ass nigga. You know, they're going
to I remember the legendary session we had in your studio. Singing, rapping, smoke. Snoop was in there. Yeah. This shit was, ooh.
Yeah, man. That's really kind of hard how I got into the business.
Really?
Like, throwing parties, man. Like, back in the day, like, I had just got on this little show called In Living Color.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, dog. And I wasn't nobody, but like I talked to this girl, really pretty, and I said, how do I get people to come to my party? She said, Jamie, throw parties, invite the girls, but don't put no pressure on them. I said, what you mean? She said, don't put no pressure on them. Make sure they can have a good time, you know what I'm saying? Relax. I said, cool. So I throw this little, it was a Halloween party, dog, and I went all out. I spent like $800. I had it catered.
Killing.
Now, you know, back then.
That's early 90s. That's early 90s.
That's early 90s. That's like 20,000. That's 20 raps at that point. So I went all out, dog. And it like it was a Halloween party and like 10:30. Wasn't nobody at the crib. I said, damn, I done blew it. I done spent all this money, got barbecue, whatever, fuck. And then like 11:30, they start rolling in. And then that's Yo-Yo came.
Oh, okay.
Ooh. Back in the day.
Yeah.
All the cats was coming, but I was wondering who big was gonna show up to stamp the party. And nigga, I'm looking outside and this motherfucking black, what is it? NXS? Or what's that? The black XS? What's that car? The Nissan? What was it? Nissan? The XS?
The XS.
That black, whatever the fuck that shit was. Black ass car, nigga, the shit was rich looking. And Wesley Snipes got out the motherfucker. And came to my, I said, oh, this is the Blade.
It's over.
This is the
Blade is in the building.
And you know, that nigga came out. I hear parties going on. Is that what this is about? I said, oh, shit. So that started like this tradition, man, of like just getting everybody in the same place, man. And I would invite musical people because I wanted to get into music too. I would invite music people to the crib. So when you saw Snoop and all them, that was just like part of what I had been doing since. Shit, man. I remember the biggest one was in 2000, and we had that's when Puff was hot. Puff was like, you know, on his shit. You know what I'm saying? This nigga would come to LA and shut all the clubs down, and we couldn't even get in our own club. That type of shit. And so I threw this. It was a house party, and Puff had threw a party for like $1 million in Philly. Damn. And I used to follow him with a camera. I said, yo, Playboy, this party's $1 million. I said, what the fuck, $1 million for a party? I said, Puff, I threw a party in LA for $400 that'll rival that'll rival this part. And he got mad. He said, "Oh, nigga, don't play." I said, "No, I'm just saying, man, you know." So he comes to L.A. He gets here. He calls me like a Saturday morning. He said, "Yo, Playboy, make that shit happen." So I called up, you know, me and Dave Brown, called up some girls or whatever like that. And I had my little small house like over there in Van Alder. And so about 12 noon, I called him. I said, "Bro, you better get here. It's fever pitch." And when he got there, he walks in. He said, "That's the girl from that show. And that's the girl from that movie." And I said, "Yeah, yeah, yeah. We all know each other. But look on the table. I got Kentucky Fried Chicken. I got Coca-Cola in a pitcher." I said, "We $208 and it's a fever pitch." And at that point, nigga, it was everybody. Missy had a room. Missy Elliott had a room. Yeah. Missy was hot. But then it was a dude standing on the wall that didn't nobody know who he was. Guess who it was? He had a tracksuit jacket on. Guess who it was? It was Jay-Z.
What? Damn.
Nobody knew who he was. And I walked up to him. He said, "Yo, nice party. It's crazy." "Like the short time?" I said, "Yeah, it's crazy." So he was there. Pharrell was there. So that tradition, we just keep it rolling.
You put that shit on. I mean, hands down, yeah. This motherfucker thought
look,
the best
Steve,
party
look, Steve. Look, Steve.
It's crazy. It's crazy. It's nice party. It's like the short time. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah. All Jack's been talking about is this part. He wants you to impersonate. Yo, listen, go ahead.
I'm laughing because every time I see you do impersonation, bro, I just think of Rodney Earl Boone's, bro.
Rodney Earl Boone's gonna be all right, my nigga.
He said he blazed trails, niggas get burned on.
I blazed my fucking trail. I understand me, niggas get burned on.
Hey, Steven, I owe you something, though, man.
What's that?
I've been stealing from you, bro.
What's that?
I've been stealing. You don't even know. Look, you know, I'm still in the gym, dog, trying to hoop.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I would have made it to the league, dog. It's just my calf muscles. I didn't have no calf muscles. But check this. Every time we battling and I got the ball,
oh, God,
and it's last shot, you know what I say?
You make love the pressure.
I make love the pressure.
I make love to pressure, bro.
I told Matt,
you told me at the game, at the Luda game, he was like, "Jack," I was walking and like, "What's up, Jamie?" I was just happy to see him. You know what I'm saying? You put him to the side. I was like, "Bro, the game was going on, Matt." He walked behind the bench and pulled me to the side while he was coaching the game. He's like, "Look, bro, I don't know what you got going on, but I'll make love to pressure. You need to make t-shirts. Bro. What a t-shirt said. Right now. We need to make it right now."
But tell a story though, because I'll be telling people tell a story about they was asking you what you would have done in that situation.
Yeah, it was a reporter, and I had made a lot of big shots with the Spurs. And and they was asking me like, "Well, you know, this is your first time in these moments, you know what I'm saying? And you've been dealing well with pressure." I say, "Well, you know, where I'm from Port Arthur, Texas, we make love to pressure."
Oh my God, bro. I almost threw my shoe at the television. I said, I'm like, ain't nobody ever said nothing like that. In all the interviews you done seen, that's the coolest shit in the world. That motherfucker said, "I make love to Chris." Hey,
I'm gonna make some shirts and send you one just so we can have, just so me and you can have them, dog.
We gonna make the shirts, we gonna make the song. "I make love to pressure."
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the song. Yeah, that's the song.
Yes. Do you wanna make love? Do you wanna make
love
the genuine
pressure?
Baby hair production.
I make love to pressure.
Yeah, my motherfucking face hurt. We ain't even started yet. God damn.
God, man. Y'all the coolest with this.
Hey, man, we appreciate you. Let's get to it, though, man. Only the second male in history to receive two Oscar nominations for two different movies for an African-American to do it. The only other person to do it was Al Pacino. We know it was a grind, but in that moment, being that part of history, what did that mean to you?
In order to get to that history, we had to go back of what I went through. You know, it's sort of like I reference everything like sports. You know, being a rookie on A Living Color with the Wayans, you know, I was like the eighth funniest person. Imagine walking into you, the eighth funniest person. It was Keenan. It was Damon. It was the fucking Tommy Davidson. Them motherfuckers was incredible. So I had to learn how to really compete. And Keenan told me something, man, that I'll never forget. Keenan was tough on us. And y'all remember, I don't know if y'all remember this era, because it was like, you know, back in the day.
No, come on, man. Living Color is one of my favorite shows.
Listen, when we was on that show, bro, think about it. It was only 22 minutes of airtime. So it was just like getting game time. Mm-hmm. So in order for you to get game time, you had to beat Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
You had to beat Damon Wayans. And Keenan said, listen, man, as a black comedian, if you ain't great, you ain't shit. He said, so I'm going to hold y'all to greatness. So I just maintain that, man. And like from doing the stand-up comedy, trying to be great at that, from watching Eddie Murphy on stage. Like, I snuck in and watched Eddie Murphy on stage when I was 19. I watched Adam Sandler do his first gig, Chris Rock, all that. So I just kept saying, if I could just beat the next motherfucker in the room, mm-hmm. I will always have a way to make my way through this business. And then finally, look, man, Ray Charles came along. That movie came along, and it was like I had been preparing myself, not knowing that this movie was gonna come along. But but when I got with the director was like, you know, when we first started working on Ray, first of all, I had to be 157 pounds.
Yeah, it was a bunch
that was
of
the
weight.
First time.
Yeah.
So right now, you know, I'm walking around now because I'm getting ready to jump up to this Tyson thing. I'm walking around now like 205, but I had to drop to 157. Mm. And then he was like, okay, I got a problem. I said, I got to be able to hold the camera on you, but I need somebody to play the piano for you. I said, no, man. My grandmother, you know, taught me how to play the piano when I was 5 years old. So I'm equipped. I'm ready to go get it. Now, mind you, nobody was really thinking about the movie Ray Charles. We weren't thinking about that. It was an independent film. And then finally, I meet Ray Charles. And I had to like really win him over. And I said, Mr. Charles, I just want to do the best that I can to tell your story. And he's like, hey, you know what? Can you play the blues? I said, I said, what? If you can play the blues band, you can do anything. So we sat down.
Oh, man,
so we sat down on the piano, right? And we started playing the piano. So we playing the blues and everything like that. And then he moved into Thelonious Monk, which is, right, real intricate jazz shit. And then I hit a wrong note. He got, hey, you know, why the fuck would you do that? I was like, oh. I was just trying to keep up. He said, hey, you know what? Hit the right notes, man. You know, that's what life is, taking your time to hit the right notes.
Yeah.
So I finally played the piece right. He got up, slapped his leg. Hey, the kids got it, and he walked out. So that preparation, when we got into the movie, was all I had. One of the problems was that I met Ray Charles while he was older. I needed the young Ray Charles. Mm-hmm. So I reached out to Quincy Jones. I go over to Quincy's house and say, hey, man, shit, come on in here, man. Shit, what are you trying to do, man? Shit. I said, I'm trying to do all the Ray Charles. I said, shit, man, Ray was a son of a bitch, man. You know, I have all the keys to what he was doing, man. He was a son of a bitch, but he was incredible. So I said, but I need to know the young Ray Charles. So he gave me a cassette tape.
That conversation I could imagine that conversation alone.
Oh, man.
Bro.
Just sitting there talking to Quincy, talking about, you know, what he did with Michael Jackson and Usher and all that shit was just amazing. And he gave me that cassette tape. He said, maybe there's something on this tape. And on that tape, people would probably have to Google this, but it was a lady named Dinah Shore on there. And she says, hi, this is Dinah Shore from the Dinah Shore Show with two very wonderful musicians, and Mr. Kenny Rogers and Mr. Ray Charles.
I've seen the edit
and in
that.
The back, you hear, hey, you know what? I'm so happy to be here, you know, Dinah. I didn't know you knew my music. Hey, you know what? And then she asked him about the drugs. She said, well, talk about the drugs, Ray. He's like, and he stopped. And so he started to, like, you know, stumble and fumble his words. So I took that as the DNA. Mm-hmm. That every time he was met with something that was challenging, he was stuttering the movie. Mm-hmm. And so then we went on, we did the movie, man. And after the movie came out, you just seen everybody flock to it. It was like, you know, when I'm doing these characters, man, sometimes the characters have to, like, embody you. So I embody Ray, and then it just caught fire. And the next thing you know, we was on our way.
Mm. You feel like that was your crowning moment, right? Like that was your welcome to, okay, I've made it. Do you feel like an exhale with that?
Well, I mean, because the thing about it is that it was nominated for an Oscar, but it was nominated for something that was dope. You know how sometimes you get nominated or people get nominated and the character be a little off? Mm-hmm. Like something that ain't really like cool.
Right.
This was something that everybody could rally around. It was the music.
Right.
The Ray was a G. He was dropping gems. He was saying things like, hey, you know what? I'm gonna make it do what it do, baby. I mean, it was like all these things that was coming out. So it was a moment in time that we all enjoyed, and it was black. You know, it was for us. Mm-hmm. It was like but at the same time, it was universal. And Dave Brown sitting here right here, show your face, Dad.
Yo.
Yeah, you okay.
Breon, what up? Is that your Breon?
That's Dave. What up, Dave?
No, that's Dave.
Nah, that's Dave.
I'm fucking with you.
Breon is Breon.
But the world know Breon now. Shout out Breon, because he was definitely doing his thing.
Shout out Breon, baby. Can't go live. But you know what? We kept it, man. During that time, man, we kept it so us. Like, we was partying with people, man. As a matter of fact, after the end of the... When we got the Oscar, right, we didn't go to the governor's ball. Dave threw a party for us, and we went over this way with the black folks, went in the party. Motherfuckers grabbed the Oscar out of my hand, was taking pictures with that shit, and we was smoking and whole nine.
Right.
Nigga shit, taking pictures and shit. I lost the motherfucker. And I saw the Oscar. It was so much weed in the motherfucking party. The Oscar was hiding, and nigga lost his motherfucking baits and shit. He was, damn, man, I know Denzel didn't do this shit with his.
Hell yeah. Well, let's take it back to, man, to really where it all started. Born Eric Martin. Marlon Bishop, a Texas boy.
Government.
Texas boy.
Yeah, man, Texas, man. Yeah, Steve, you know what it's about. Back in the day, I had that California curl.
Yes, sir.
Hey, talk to him a little bit, though. I read on how you changed, the reason why you changed your name. Tell our fans what the reason behind changing from, you know, your government name to Jamie.
Yeah, what happened was that in L.A., it was like open mic night. So like I went on as Eric Bishop at the Comedy Store. And that's back in the day where like on Monday nights, bro, it was crazy. You see different people out. You see like the young Tupac out. You see everybody out. Man. Everybody would come out on Monday. That's a trip. You know what I'm saying? We didn't know we was hanging with legends. You see young Tupac out. I remember Tupac was hanging and we was like, damn, that's a nigga pop, whatever. And I finally get on stage, right? When I get on stage, like, I see, like, you know, I'm straight from Texas, Steve. I didn't know L.A., but everybody was dressed in blue. I was like, what the fuck is this motherfucker?
Your pants probably still starch down.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? What the fuck, nigga? But everybody was dressed in blue, Steve. But it was Crips.
Right.
It was like, I didn't know what it was, you know? And they said, nigga, that's the Crips. I said, what the fuck? So
what the fuck?
They say, they come to this motherfucker, you know, all the time. So what I did was I was watching the room. And I went up and I did all of my impersonations, but I did them like if they was a Crip. Like, what if Mike Tyson was a Crip? I thought, you know, what's up when Mike Tyson weight boxing champion? What's up, Crip? Motherfuckers was going crazy and shit, right? And so after I get like this standing ovation, I come back the next week and they wouldn't let me on the stage because the comedians were running the list. So, like, for, like, a few weeks, I couldn't get back on. I was like, damn, what the fuck? So I go to this one Santa Monica Improv, and I noticed that every time they had a open mic night, you know, it'll be a gang of dudes there, right, and only, like, five girls. But the five girls will always get on stage. So what I did on the list, I wrote down all these unisex names, like Stacey Green, Tracy Brown, Jamie Foxx, and the dude picked Jamie Foxx as I was at this other place. He said, Jamie Foxx, is she here? I said, yo, that's me. So I go on stage that night. He's like, that's you? I said, yeah, nigga, that's me right here. Jamie, nigga, what's up? So
what's up?
I go on stage. You know, I hit him with the Cosby, Bill Cosby, the Crip and the Dodgers, all that shit. I hit him. And I was the only nigga doing I was doing Ronald Reagan impersonation, the only black dude. Well, as a matter of fact, I crip, right? Nigga, killing the shit. So now they shooting Evening at the Improv at that time, and I have a great set, get a standing ovation. And so they like, yo, that's that new kid, Jamie Foxx. And so that's when it stuck. And I had to get used to the name because they was like yelling out my name, said Jamie, but I wasn't paying no attention to him. So the niggas thought I was stuck up, but I had just got used to the name. You know what I'm saying? So that's how I changed the name up.
That's dope. And then the rest is
history. That's crazy.
Yeah, man.
Talk to us a little bit day. I mean, we locked up right now. How are you and the family? What you got going on? The new norm, what's that for you?
Man, listen, man, I consider myself blessed at this time because, you know, My whole family is healthy. When it first jumped off, I said, I got a feeling, you know, I'm a Texas boy. I said, I got a feeling about this. I said, let's all get in the same place. So all 12 of us got in the same place. We hunkered down. We got what we needed. And we've been safe, man. But, you know, your heart goes out to everybody else, right, man. And I try to tell people all the time that even when it comes to our political figures, right, I try to, because, you know, we be on the phone with these guys. You know, and I know everybody. I done gigs for Republicans. I done gigs for Democrats. I'm a Democrat myself. But all I've been saying on the phone is just think about the common man. Just think about the common man. Mm-hmm. Constantly, like, put yourself in, like, you know, everybody don't have. So in these next few weeks, it's really critical that we get the right information, especially when it comes to us, when it comes to Black folks, you know, because we're being
misled,
and we're also being affected more than anybody. So, you know, we're trying to stay calm, trying to keep their word out, trying to keep their positive energy, and trying to think about, you know, the person that's really out there struggling, bro.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Straight up.
Thanks. How much you miss sports? I know you play a lot. I know sports has been a big part of your life. How much you missing sports right now?
Bro, Steven, it's killing. If it's one thing that's killing in the lockdown, it is not being able to watch. Nigga, the basketball shit was heating up. It was so crazy.
It was time.
Bro, think about what King James had just did.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Them three games where he lumped Milwaukee,
Clippers.
The Clippers.
Yep.
Who else he lumped?
Denver. I think it was Denver after that.
In Denver?
Yep.
He
was on some remarkable shit at the year 17. Mm. So I was just watching that, like, man, I can't wait for this shit to play out. So you missing that, and now you're wondering, are they gonna be able to? I'm sure y'all know. Are they gonna be able to come back?
Sure, we
you
don't.
Know, that's what
we don't know.
Damn. But that was to me it was at the right time. I was like, everybody on their game, mm-hmm. and it was like the big boys was out to see Kawhi, mm-hmm. To see
Greek freak.
That's what I'm saying. Bonjour. Now I'm babyface, nigga. All in the camera. Shit, nigga, I fucked that up. I did say that to him one time. I fucked up. I thought the motherfuckers were friends. I said, bonjour. He said, what do you say? I know you from somewhere over there, nigga. That's all I know.
Hey, man, missing. Yeah, no, big part. I mean, like you said, it's the best time, right? I mean, obviously, the playoffs would be going on right now, but like you said, there was so much parity in the league this season, and so many people wanted to see what that Laker-Clipper playoff matchup was going to be like. So I hope we could hopefully get there. Jack, you all right over there, bro?
Yeah, man, this motherfucker crazy. Man.
Bonjour, Jack. Hey, but I got a feeling, Jack. Yeah, hey, man, let's get into it. I got a feeling, though, he was about to make some history, man. Let me ask y'all this, though. A player that is playing someone like LeBron James, and now I'm watching the Michael Jordan documentary. Mm-hmm. The question is, how hard is it now playing sports in a world with social media where the narratives are so crazy? Because when I look at Michael, he was so heralded, man, and well-deserved. Do you think, I mean, how would that would have played out in modern day times if we'd have had social media? That's
a great question.
Jordan would be bigger. He'll be 10 times even bigger. Like the D-Way say, Jordan was chosen to be the GOAT. Like, he didn't ask to be the GOAT. He was chosen to be the GOAT. But if they would have had social media and all this technology when MJ was coming up, he'll be 10 times bigger than what he is now.
And here's the question, though. Would it be controversy as well? Because when I look at it, like, the guys that play now, they don't get that love like they normally do.
No. It's always hate. It's always hate.
It's always a hate. Because I'm looking at LeBron like he's in his 17th year putting up these type of numbers. Anybody to do anything for 17 years good, some motherfuckers get a plaque or get, you know what I'm saying, niggas give him some kind of shit. But he gets a lot of controversy. Why is that?
Because I just think it's easier today to show. It takes a strong man to show love. You know what I mean? And I think you made a great point. There's distractions back then. There's no doubt, and they're the rock stars, biggest team in the world. But at the same time, there wasn't. We just did an interview with Bradley Beal, talking about how the media tried to put him and John Wall against each other when they're actually good friends, like brothers. You know what I mean? Right. So, to think if social media would have been able to get in that locker room with the shit that was going on with Pippen, because obviously Mike felt a certain way about it. You know what I mean? And Pitt had his reasons. You know what I mean? Right. So what if social media got their hands on that and threw that shit around? Could that have possibly caused a friction in their relationship or friendship or their chemistry? So that's a great question.
Well, it would have fucked it up, don't you think, Jack? Because, I mean, I don't see how these guys, like, man, you know, like, I'm sensitive, too. Like, a motherfucking comment to tear your ass up, you'd be ready to tear your computer up and shit.
Yeah.
How would they have dealt with all of that, Jack?
Well, that shit affected Bron and Kyrie. You know, the media affected that. Mm-hmm. And just imagine if they would have stayed together. But me, personally, with Bron, all this chatter, it don't matter to him. Because before all this chatter, when Bron was a teenager, Bron was sitting there thinking in his own mind, I want to be better than Jordan. I want to be the best to play the game. So everything that's being said now or has been said to him in year 17 after all he's done, it don't matter because his goal was set in his own mind, not based off what other people think.
Right. Top five. Who your point guard, Steve? Top five all the time. Who your point guard? Mm. I do this all the time.
Top five. My point guard would be LeBron James.
Ooh. Matt, what you think?
I got Magic's my point guard.
Magic point guard. All right, my point guard be LeBron too. Two.
I'm going Jordan.
I got Jordan in my two.
I got Kobe in my three.
Kobe in my three.
Wow. Kobe in my three. Go ahead.
Duncan at my four.
Tim Duncan at your four.
I got KD at my four.
I was about to say KD at my four. Now here's the thing. Five.
I'm gonna change because I had a different order. I had a different order the other day, but I'm changing my five is Shaq.
Yeah, that's who I had. I'm going with Diesel at five.
Shaq, Diesel at five. Now, here's the thing. Now, let's do eras, because that's mine for the new era. What about the old era?
I'm going with Mo Cheeks.
Mo Cheeks? I'm going with Magic.
I'm still taking Magic. You know what?
No. Hold on. I take mine back. I'm going Isaiah.
Oh, good call.
Ooh, okay. Good call. I'm going Magic one. Who we going to?
I got Jordan still.
Jordan two, for sure.
Three.
We going back now. We going back. I'm gonna go.
No. I'm saying the rules. Like rules. Like different rules. Like, you know, like this era.
I let Jordan have his. I'm going George Gervin.
Ooh. I'm gonna go LeBron at three.
Ooh, three. I'm going to go Bernard King.
Ooh.
You going old school on him, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fuck, I'm going with Pip.
Pip, nice.
Ooh.
Actually, hold on. I'm going to take Pip back. I'm going to go Grant Hill at my three.
Oh, okay. Ooh. Okay. All right.
I need Bird in there.
That's your three? Or four?
Four.
Okay. Four. Oh, that's a nice one.
Bird at the four is a nice stretch four. Bird
four. I'm going at the four. I'm going, boy, that was tough. That was Bird.
That's something that French lick.
Yeah, I know, right? I got to go Bird, too.
I'm like, there you go, Bird.
I'm going with McHale.
McHale at four. All right. Shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Shoulders. McHale, excuse me, Barkley. I got Barkley at my four.
Nice. There you go.
Bizalark.
Yeah, I got Barkley.
Ernie. That's what I'm saying, Ernie. It's just terrible, Ernie. Five.
Who you got?
Oh, I got Kareem Abdul.
That's a tough.
I ain't got no choice. I'm going with Wilt.
I'm going with Elijah one since I picked Shaq earlier.
Oh, the dream.
Footwork.
They sleep on the dream.
Oh, man. We touched on it a little bit ago, but what are your thoughts on seeing this Last Dance documentary? Because I think we're spoiled today with everyone just getting to see everything about athletes, entertainers, whatever. It wasn't that way. Like we just touched on, it wasn't that way. So now we're getting to see almost a social media look at behind the scenes of how great that team was. But like you said, we're slowly but surely finding out there are some chinks in the armor. What are your thoughts about what you've seen so far?
Well, you know what it is? I think that in today's world, had this documentary came out, there was no social media, we would be able to watch it and take it in. Mm-hmm. The problem is, once it comes out, social media, now look at Scottie Pippen, what he got to deal with, because they're talking about his money. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, they're making memes, mm-hmm. and it's sort of hard for today's world to accept it. Now, me being from back at that time, or not back at the time, but I mean being old enough to have seen those games, I appreciate it in a different way because I'm like, damn, I finally get a chance to hear Michael talk about Scotty. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I thought was the one bright, because everybody was shit on Scotty, be like, Scotty wasn't shit, he wasn't there. Michael did it all on his own. I said, yo, man, y'all tripping. Scotty Pippen was one of the coldest motherfuckers, assassins ever. And I said, and without him,
there's no Jordan legacy.
Watch it. Exactly. Here's the thing. You guys know this. It's about being comfortable. If somebody can make your job easier, whether you're playing basketball or whether I'm in a movie with great actors, when somebody can lift your shoulders, where Michael ain't got to worry about guarding the main player so you can save his leg, because you know you need Michael for that triangle offense. Anytime you got somebody to alleviate that type of pressure from Pippen, Dennis Rodman,
Ron Harper.
Yeah, Ron Harper, you Tony Kukoc, these guys were Hall of Famers. And so when you look at that, now you're able to see, because, you know, they're going to give you 10 parts, but you're able to see what allowed Michael Jordan to be Michael Jordan. And those guys were super important. Absolutely. So I'm glad that they're getting that shine, taking nothing from Michael, because, you know, that's Rembrandt. You can't say it's the GOAT. But they have to understand, and I'm glad they're showing it now, that it was a lot of help in that, man, because the days... Look, a lot of times we see highlights, and we see the greatest of the great, but we don't see those times when you struggle, and I think that's what's great about it, when you see the struggle.
Just wanted to say this. It felt good to see the quote from Mike saying, you can't talk about Michael Jordan without Scottie Pippen. I think to reiterate what he said, it felt good to finally see that quote and see Mike say that.
Yeah, man, because I know for Scottie, man, think about being Scottie, just being like, damn, you know, they don't ever say, they don't ever...
He's stupid.
They got the greatest voice in the world. Yeah, Central Arkansas.
This nigga
he got a woofer on his throat.
Yeah,
I had to turn the bass off my TV when Scotty was on. Hey, you know.
Boy, I got six by nines on his throat.
Hey, man, motherfucker.
But back to your point, I think the crazy part is just because we say Mike had help doesn't lessen Mike's greatness. You know what I mean?
Not at all. It's just that Mike, you know, look, a lot of times, you know, like the tough things now is even talking about who would you pick?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Mike's whole brand is so huge. It's hard to have a conversation about just basketball. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad they got a chance to show just the basketball.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I think it's important because Skip Bayless says something today that Scotty wasn't one of the greatest. He wasn't this, he wasn't that. And to me, Mike's legacy, Mike will still be great regardless. If he had Pip, he would be great. But like you said, he lessened the burden. But then there's no titles without Pip. And when we talk about legacy, we talk about winning championships. So Mike is a great player. There's no knock on that, obviously, the greatest of all time. Yeah. But when we talk about legacy, and Mike said in his own words, like, there's no Mike without Pip. You know what I mean? So I'm glad that people are finally getting to see how important Pip was, because, like I said, us, you know, we're in our 40s now. We know how motherfucking important and how good Pip was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. But you can't listen to Skip. See, that's the other thing. See, that's why I fuck with y'all, man. Skip and them be trying to get headlines, man, and just say that wild shit. That's why Shannon be on that. Skip. Shannon be on that. Skip. There you go. Skip. Now, Skip.
All day, that's all he say. All day.
I be counting how many times he says skip. No, skip.
That's all he say, bro.
But you know, you can't listen to them. I don't listen to them. I listen to y'all, man, because you know y'all played it. Y'all know it.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Hey, pivoting back to sports though, I know sports probably started in your childhood. Can you talk to us about that?
Hey, man, you know, in Texas, man, it was everything, man. Like, playing football was out there. Like, we didn't have no basketball team coming up. Like, and I just seen some, didn't I see some football clips, man?
Yeah, that was my thing. I had to show, Jack was hating on me. Football is my first sport, so I feel you. I played football in the street growing up. That was my shit.
Yeah, so you understand that, well, man, football in Texas was everything, man.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, like, I remember, like, being a sophomore, getting on the varsity team, and that was big back then, you know, to be a sophomore. And I remember finally getting on the team, and I had worked all summer. My father was a coach. He coached at another school, at Lincoln High School, but I worked all summer, and I didn't get picked up.
Dallas Lincoln,
baby! You know what I'm saying? So I didn't get picked up, and I was in terror. And then finally, like, somebody couldn't play. Like, one of the quarterbacks couldn't play. We ran a three-quarterback thing. the coach came out there, and while I was in my like we was having 2 days, he
says, "I got a spot for you over in the other locker room if you want it."
So I went over, I couldn't believe it. It was like the Cosby Kids. I said, "Nigga, I'm on Varsity." And then I walked in, dog, and it taught me about just being able to be on another level, like to really strive. So I walked in and they had carpet on the floor, dog. Mm. You know, like I was like, damn, they got carpet on the floor. So I walked in, I'm looking at the carpet, then all of a sudden, dog, I just passed out. Just passed the fuck out. And the reason I passed out, cause one of the guys on the team, Keith Henderson, who was like a blue chip, had hit me in the solar plex, knocked me out. I said, "Wake the fuck up, sophomore. What the fuck you doing with your goddamn shoes on the carpet and shit?" I was like, "What?" And then all the seniors, you know, was hazing me and shit like that. And it was just like a feeling that you couldn't imagine, bro. They hazed me and shit. But then when I got out there on the team, at being 15, bro, I ended up starting on the team.
Oh, that's crazy.
Got a super interception on a scrimmage. You had to go scrimmage McKinney Lions. And the one thing I knew all my plays and shit, but they had marched all the way down the field. They ran a little bootleg. I stepped in front of them, got the interception. Bro, my whole life changed. And when people talk about, I caught the motherfucking interception, bro. And I went from being sophomore to Eric Bishop, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it was like, people ask me what's the biggest moment in my life? And that was the biggest moment. Getting that interception, proving to these motherfuckers that I could do it. Mm. And then from then on, man, I became a quarterback my junior year. Then I went to pass for over 1,000 yards my senior year. Wow. With a 21 interception. But, you know, it was crazy.
He was Jameis Winston before Jameis Winston?
yeah, it was kind of bad. Because I was a stat stuffer. I had a newspaper stats in my pocket. I need 9 more yards. I need to get 3 yards. We were losing, but... But yeah, man, but sports was everything. And then I went to state in the high jump. I was 5'7", 5'8", but I was jumping 6'6".
Okay. Yeah, and then you played some hoop too, right?
Yeah, but that was later, man. Like, our hoop team was terrible. You know, like how you go to basketball gyms and they got the banners of the championships? Our banner said, "Welcome."
That's it.
All you had to say. Mary, we was terrible, but you know.
Dallas Lincoln had all the basketball banners because we
Lincoln had the basketball players.
Yeah, we was put off the Lincoln and Dallas star. Lincoln. We played against Dallas Lincoln a lot in the state championship, but Port Arthur Lincoln and Dallas Lincoln, we both got a lot of championships.
Yeah, man, and Port Arthur with that track, you motherfuckers could fly, bro.
Jamal
they don't
Charles.
Know. They don't know Jack.
Yeah, that's Jamal Charles right there.
And the boys is running from the cops. Got him on the track. Did some good. That's all it was.
That's hilarious.
Best way to get fast, steal something.
Yeah,
they're not gonna catch your ass. Did you were in a band back then too, right?
Man, shit, I was in all kinds of bands. Me and my boys had a band called Excalibur, dog. We was trying to get on Excalibur, some shit like cassette tape days, man. You know, but I remember we was like at a, you know, the little talent shows and shit at the school, man. You know, had my curl and shit.
Mm, you used to have, you know. A question, because Deion said his shit was dry. Was your curl wet or dry?
My shit was dry, dog.
Was
you know
it?
Why? I didn't use the Stay Soft Fro. I used some shit called Hollywood Curl. So it was like a cream. You put that motherfucker in there, and then you know it stayed dry. So when girls see me, I used to tell them I was Dominican. You know what I'm saying? Because I thought that shit was real. Dominican. Estás escuchando? You know what I'm saying? They had to keep your shit dry. If the shit too wet, it's like So I had the Hollywood curl.
Yes, you had a curl that could have been on the side of one of them boxes. You had a real curl back then.
Bro,
that shit was clean.
Listen to
me. I want number 7.
Let me tell you. Nigga, let me tell you something. It's better than that. I had the picture of them niggas ready for the world, and I took it into the shop. I said, "I need this right here, dog. I need Melvin Riley. Riley from Ready for the World." So they put the shit in my shit. I had it was low in the front, long in the back. It looked like a Z-28.
This nigga say Melvin Riley.
Melvin Riley. It looked like a Z-28. Because I had the low and the long.
Uh-huh.
So Ready for the World, come to Reunion Arena. I got tickets, dog. Row 6.
You right up in the mix.
And I swear to God, when Melvin Riley came out, he looked at me and said,
"Oh my God.
I did like this. I said, "Yeah, nigga, you see this." You know what I'm saying? Curl.
Swinging, sitting, looking good.
All the way. Hell yeah.
You recognize
and
that
then when
shit.
I finally got it... And how, what was crazy is, man, I finally get on, and Melvin Riley came to my house.
Really?
I said, motherfucker. I said, yeah. That's how great God is, man. It's like I ended up getting on and then having him at the crib. I said, man, you don't remember me? He's like, no, mama, I don't remember.
Remember I had your curl in row six?
Mm-hmm. All that. But you know, the music was everything, man. Yeah. Music, I was always just trying to get into the music, you know, playing, writing songs and shit, and, you know, singing Lionel Richie songs back in the day, you know, to the girls, hello, all them shits. You know, I was just mimicking everything. And then now it's crazy how now these people, like, are in my cell phone, you know what I'm saying? It's mm-hmm. like, it's like blessings like you can't believe. Mm.
So you went to college to study music, performing arts. When did you get into the stand-up comedy gig?
When I got to San Diego doing music, I was in a college, like international college. It was 81 different countries that were represented in my school. So I would do the music in San Diego, but I would drive up to L.A., do the comedy clubs, or I would do La Jolla, the comedy store down in La Jolla. And I was only 18, so I couldn't get in the club. So they would make me wait outside the club, you know what I'm saying, and then bring me in, let me do my stand-up. So I was constantly like, you know, since I was clowning, since I was a kid, you know, I was constantly like working on my, you know, working on the craft. And I got in early. And that was the big thing, was like using the college as a sort of like a landing pad. But since L.A. was only, you know, shit, an hour and a half away, I would come up here and get it popping. And then my uncle was assistant chief of police of school districts named Mel Brown. He said, I know you sang and stuff. I said, yeah. He said, you come on up here and I want you to meet Harvey Fuqua. I said, who that? He said, that's Marvin Gaye's manager. Mm. So I'm thinking, I don't know, goddamn Marvin Gaye, man. This nigga full of shit. Fuck out of here, man. I'm drunk. So he give me an address, and then he's a joking motherfucker, so I'm thinking it's a fake address. But I get there, it's in Brentwood, and when I look on the mailbox, it says Dorothy, Gaye, and Freeman, and knock on the door, and Harvey Fuqua comes to the door, this big black dude. He said, you the one that sang? I said, yeah. He said, come on in. So when I went in the apartment, I looked to the left, and it was these reel-to-reels and keyboards and shit. And he said, you see that? I said, yeah. He said, that's Marvin Gaye's keyboard. The last thing he played before he died. Mm. And bro, I sat down, started playing. And the dude was like, yo, man, you got it. And so I started like singing and shit like that. And he started having me come to the crib. And I was trying to get on. At one point, it got a little weird because he was having me singing Marvin Gaye songs all the time, having people come over. And I was like, yo, man, I know you're missing Marvin and stuff, but I wanna get my own thing. He said, oh, I apologize, man. He said, you know, we had just lost him not too long ago. I said, cool. So I basically became like his assistant, like filing stuff for him so I could just, you know, just stay around the house. And bro, this is a crazy story. At one point, I was filing these cassette tapes, right? And I picked up one cassette tape just seeing what was on it, and I pressed play, and it was... it was the original... of sexual healing.
Wow.
And I'm like, damn, nigga, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, I could take this shit and get some money for this shit. And I said, nah, I ain't gonna do that. I went, woke him up. I said, man, you gotta tell me about this. He said, yeah, man, I got a lot of them cassettes. We was working on something. I said, tell me about that night, man. He said, this is what it was. Marvin was in the studio. It's like 4 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, Marvin, man, let's go, man. It's late, you know? And he had connected all these little, these tape machines together working on this track. And he said, yeah, I know it's late. He says, but where's Marilyn? He said, man, Marilyn's asleep right here on the couch, man. Let's go. And he goes, get up, Marilyn. Wake up, Marilyn. Get up, Marilyn. He said, nigga, I got it. Run the tape back. Boom, get up, get up.
Oh, that's crazy.
Bro, that's how crazy is
that?
So that's... I call myself the Black Forrest Gump, bro, because I've just been like in every nook and cranny of this business. And then, you know, shit worked out. Mm.
Talk to us a little bit how you landed that In Living Color role.
I had got on this one TV show called Rock, mm-hmm. but for some reason they fired me. Some shit went down. I don't know what the fuck went down, but I got fired. And I had shot the pilot, and I told everybody in Terrell that I was going to be on the pilot. And when the pilot came out, you know, I wasn't on there. So my grandmother thought I was out here doing drugs or some shit. I was like, damn, I got to get this shit right. And so then the show In Living Color was looking for other comedians. And I went in to like the cattle call. So it went from 100 to 50 to 25 to 10 down to 5. So it was me and four other cats, right? And to be honest, during the audition part, I was blowing that shit. I wasn't doing good. But then Keenan said, look, I want to see y'all do stand-up. And I was like, oh, shit. And the other four people didn't do stand-up comedy. So they had to, this is when the Laugh Factory first started. So I go down to the Laugh Factory, but I was late on purpose because I wanted to go last. So when I go up, you know, like in the hood, you always play your music, because that's where I came from, like Robin Harris. Yeah. And hood. So I told her, I was like, I got my music and shit. I had it queued up. But the Laugh Factory was more like the white place. So I said, play the music. They didn't play the music. I was like, oh, shit. So I went up there and just started freestyling some shit. And in the audience was Keenan and Jim Carrey and the Fly Girls.
Damn.
But I did this one joke, bro. And it was about, I said, black and white people, black and white men, the only difference is the heartbeat. Because the average white man's heart beats like this. Right? While the average black man's heart beats like this. They going crazy, bro. And then I said, ladies, that's why when you're making love, I'm not saying who's better, but who would you rather make love to? Somebody like this? Or would you rather make love to? And an ovation, bro. I saw Keenan and everybody going crazy, still man. They were like, oh, I seen the Fly Girls. And boom, I was on the show.
Where did you get the motivation for some of the characters you've, you know, made your career off of?
Wanda.
Mm. Oh, man. Hey, man, listen. You know what Wanda came from? Just, you know how a motherfucker run out of time?
I know a girl look like Wanda. I grew up with her.
So you know, you take all them girls that you grew up with and that type of shit, and you bring them up, man. You know how Texas is, man, and all wherever I've been. But that came when one night I had ran out of material, and I just said, hey, all the pretty girls, make some noise. Pretty girls clapping. I said, now, all the ugly girls, let me hear you say something. And there was complete silence. And I said, man, look at all the ugly girls talking about, hey, you ain't talking about me. Hell no, no. Boom. So it started like that. I did that character at the audition. So when Keenan said, hey, man, do that motherfucking ugly girl that you do for one of the shows. So he reached in his bag, bro, found his blonde-ass wig, popped the shit on, bro. And it was like, hey, I'll rock your world. Nigga,
it was
took
over.
But I needed that because if you think about it, Living Color and all those characters that they were doing at the time, you needed to get a character
off.
If not, they was going to fire
you. Had to.
Yeah, because, you know, it was just like, this is like any basketball team. You was going to get cut. So that character took off, man. And then, like, it took off and I loved it. But then I had to shed that shit. Because,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, motherfuckers was, you know, like, the girls shit, niggas was coming up to me in clubs like, yo, nigga, you the bitch? I said, hold on. Shit, you know what I'm saying?
Back up a second.
Johnny Gill said something one time in the club, hey, nigga, you that girl? I said, hey, nigga, hey, my, nigga, hold on, nigga. So I didn't want to get stuck in the motherfucker. So, you know, I just had to keep coming up with other characters so I could keep hitting motherfuckers right. with different shit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they say, I don't just do her. I do all these motherfuckers.
Yeah, yeah.
How instrumental was Keenan Ivory Wayans, not only for Living Color, but launching and giving guys like yourself, Jim Carrey, I mean, David Alan Greer, Tommy Davidson, that platform to go on. If you think about that cast, I'm sure you've done it, but all you guys went on to long, successful longevity in whatever profession, you know, whatever realm you wanted to do.
Compared to that coach that was really hard on you, I remember Keenan saying, listen, you got to prove yourself. Maybe I don't think you're as funny as everybody else. But at the same time, what he did was, when you walk on the set, bro, it was all black people.
Mm-hmm.
Black writers, black people working. I said, damn, am I in the right spot? It was all black, but he held that shit here. All of you had to be absolutely airtight. But what it was, man, he had his finger on the culture, bro. He knew the music. He had the Fly Girls. But every time we went out to do some jokes, like we would come to Keenan and say, yo, man, we don't think the writers is writing funny. And I said, yes, they are. Y'all motherfuckers just ain't trying. And he would take whatever that was written. He would look through that shit. He said, go try this. And the next thing you know, bro, we would talk to the town on that Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like he would constantly put us in competition with each other. You know, Tommy Davidson killing that shit. David Alan Greer killing that shit. Mm-hmm. Everybody was killing. And what he did was he made it sexy. It was like everybody came to the show. J-Lo was on the show. I remember seeing J-Lo the first time I saw J-Lo. I said, hey, man, I'm not hitting on you. You're the most beautiful person in the world. I said, I got a girl. I said, but congratulations. And she was like, she was just killing that shit. And so we became friends. And then, like, if you think about it, back at the time, every hip-hop star, he was seeing the future. All the hip-hop was coming through to In Living Color. Yep. Yeah, man, you had Teddy Riley was there.
Dos Effects.
Dos Effects, everybody. So he taught you how to be fly with your shit. Like, you could be funny, but at the same time, be super fly. Bro, that was 91, 92. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So to this day, we still rocking, man. And those guys are still doing their thing. And it's because of those early lessons.
Shout out Keenan Ivory Wayans, because I don't think we hear him mentioned enough to what he gave to the game. One of the legends.
Bro, he put all that shit together, and he had a motherfucker nervous, dog. Look, we supposed to be there at 10. I got there at 9:59. That motherfucker pulled me out the meeting. Said, why you late? I said, it's 9:59. He said, nah. Now we start working at 10. So you got to give me an answer. I said, like what? So you better figure it out. You can stand out here until you figure it out. I'm outside. Damn, nigga, I got a principal? Like, what the fuck? And so I would just sleep on the set so I wouldn't be late. Because, you know, I come out the club. I was Allen Iverson. I come out the club, nigga.
This nigga's crazy.
I was AI, nigga. We talking about practice. Yeah. We talking about practice. I'm supposed to be franchise player. Like, nigga. So right. I would just go straight to the set and then just wake up. I'd be on time.
The Jamie Foxx show, something I watched, you know, Fancy, Braxton, you know, Mom and Pop. Yeah. Talk to us how that came about and how you ended up getting that off the ground.
To be honest with you, bro, I had ran out of money and Living Color was over. I remember, you know, L.A. tough on you, too.
Yeah.
I was riding, after In Living Color was over, I was riding, I had this little BMW with the top down, and I'm riding down the street like on Sunset or something, and I hear somebody say, that shit over, motherfucker. I was like,
damn. Huh?
Damn. Harsh. Right?
That shit over, motherfucker.
So, that shit over, motherfucker. I was like, God damn. It was bad, bro. And I remember, like, Chris Tucker was coming up. I remember Chris Tucker was coming young. I was like, God damn, these niggas are hitting. I remember this girl ran up to me. She says, oh, my God. I'm like, what's up? She said, do you know where Chris Tucker is? I said, oh, shit. What the fuck? So I had moved to Vegas, bro, because I ran out of money. And then this network called the WB was starting their network. And so I went in and met with them and said, I got this idea. And people probably have to Google this, but there was this English television show called Fawlty Towers with John Cleese. And it was like the Benny Hill and all them type
of stuff. Benny Hill, yeah. I remember Benny Hill.
Yeah, all them. So I saw that hotel show. I said, hey, man, I want to do a show like that where my aunt and aunt run a hotel, and I come to work there. And by having a hotel, we can have different people fall through there. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so they was like, okay, cool. We dig it. We just trying to get going. So they gave me the opportunity. And, bro, I remember the upfronts. You know, you got to go to the upfronts to announce your show. Bro, I didn't even have a limo. It was like I went to get in the limo, and some lady slapped my hand. That's not for you. That's for Savannah, some other show, man. Nigga, I had no limo. Nigga put me in a van. I was like, oh, shit. Riding it up. You know that plain white panel van? I said, damn, nigga. So finally the show come out, though. Bro, it did Seinfeld numbers. It did like shit like 14 or something like that. And then it just caught, you know? And then Fancy came from the R. Kelly video, Garcelle Beauvais, Sac Passe Nabulet, Braxton, of course, Garrett Morris and all them. And you don't know when you're doing it, bro, but it just all came together and it became like this thing that people, you know,
gravitated to,
man, and it was on.
Absolutely. I love that shit. That was dope. 96, Jerry Maguire movie comes out. You went out for Rod Tidwell. They end up giving it to Cuba Gooding Jr. How bad did you want that role? Because that was a dope movie.
Bro, it was crazy because, you know, the dude saw me read for it and says, he's going to love it. I said, who? T.C. Tom Cruise is going to love it. I said, what? So, bro, I ended up reading with Tom Cruise. They flew me to New York, you know, but, you know, I wasn't used to seeing no big stars and shit, you know. So in the reading, bro, I'm reading the shit. And, you know, I'm from TV, so I was reading kind of loud. And then I was like, yeah, show me the money. You know what I mean? Looking at Tom Cruise, like, yeah, show me. You know what I mean? And Tom Cruise, you know, he a movie actor, so his voice was soft. He said, so I couldn't hear him, so I thought he had lost his place. I said, we right here. He says, I know, I've already said my line. I'm waiting on you. I said, oh, shit. And then, you know, motherfucker got nervous and shit, started sweating. I blew it, and after I blew it, I was like, damn, I know I blew this shit. The little producer was mad at me. And then Cuba Gooding got it, right? But then when Collateral came up,
mm-hmm.
Tom Cruise remembered that, him and Michael Mann, and boom, he liked the reading, and boom. And so, you know, what ended up being Lemons turned out being Lemonade because right. We did Collateral, and we actually get nominated
yep.
for mm-hmm. Collateral. So, mm-hmm. you know, just hanging in there, man, right. you know. Making that shit pop. I was like, man, I can't miss them free throws like that because I miss the free throws, dog.
Straight up.
I miss that motherfucker.
Any Given Sunday, 99.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, how did that role come about?
Did that shit start your sophomore year when you got punched in the solar plex? You was training to be Willie Beeman?
I didn't even know, man, but it was crazy. It was crazy because Oliver Stone directed it. And basically, Puffy was supposed to play the part, but Puffy was, you know, he was dealing with big businesses and everything like that. So... Oliver Stone at one point when I came in to read again, you know, he said I was horrible, bro, because I was like reading loud and shit. He says, fuck, you read so loud, you this television shit is fucking me up. So what I did was, bro, I had just got that 97 coupe, that Mercedes. I got a camcorder, bro, put on my football gear, took all my homies out and just started like I was in training camp, bro. And while we was doing the training camp shit, I came up with a song. My name is Willie Beeman. I keep the ladies creaming and all the fans got them screaming. Think you can defeat me? You're dreaming. So we made this song up and bro, I show him the tape.
Oh, shit.
That's who the fuck I'm looking for right now. That's who I want. Mm-hmm. So we started in to give him a Sunday, bro, and we were shooting that shit in Miami. I didn't even get paid. All the money that I got, bro, I spent it in Miami. I was just...
I can believe it.
That nigga came home.
Oh, my God. Come on, bro.
Came home with nothing.
First time absolute zero. Goose egg. The dog, I had a ball. Niggas was in Miami with mesh shirts and Ferraris and shit. I was off the chain, man. And then you think about everybody that was in it.
Mm.
Al Pacino, Jim Brown, Lawrence Taylor,
Dennis Quaid,
me and LL was fighting. That shit was real, man.
Talk to us about that, because I heard you touch on that shit. I heard there was some real shit going on with that.
I can't take that right now.
LL was in his feelings on that one, but that motherfucker, yo, what's up? What happened was, for some reason, like, he kept slapping me. I think he thought it was a little bit real in the movie. I was like, nigga, we not really on a fucking team. Like, we actors, my nigga. Like, nigga, we really don't have to get to practice. Like, nigga, we going to say action. But, you know, but I think that's what made the movie real, because we was, like, really competitive. But we was doing a scene, and the motherfucker pushed me in the scene, bro. And I swear to God, I landed in somebody else's set. I went back so far. I said, what the fuck? And so then it got testy, man, and we got to scrapping or whatever like that, you know. But,
Jamie say he woke up in Green Mile.
Nigga, I woke up in a whole nother set, nigga. I woke up in Jerry Maguire and said, why does big-ass nigga push me like this, man? No, this ain't a real movie.
Yeah, that shit was dope.
But, you know, we worked this shit out. We cool now, but at the time, it was sort of goofy. But it fueled the scene, because when we was doing them scenes and Willie Beeman was going through his shit, that shit was real, man, because it's like, you know how it is, man. You get competitive.
Yeah.
You know, you get really competitive, yeah, and it was girls on the set.
You felt that energy.
And I was so wild. Every time I showed up to the set, I had a Hummer. I had a different car every time. You know, I was playing the whole role, had the girls in the car and shit showing up to the set. So I was out of my fucking mind, bro. But it as far as just the acting goes, like that speech.
Yeah.
Everybody remember the Al Pacino speech, right? Yeah. Here's a fun fact. Al Pacino was having a tough time with that speech because he ain't never been around football. That's where I knew football.
Mm-hmm.
So when he was trying to get that speech off, I said, Al, when you talking to these players, they not your players. They your family.
Mm-hmm.
I said, a lot of these players come from the hood. They only father is you.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to talk to them like it's your father. Man, that motherfucker
turned up on you.
That motherfucker turned on you. You fight
with your fingernails.
Oh, that's dope.
Every inch. That motherfucker, I said, God, that motherfucker killed that shit.
He did. He killed that shit. How was the football scenes, though? I know that had to be dope to shoot. How was the football scenes?
I wanted to do all of my stunts, right? So we would shoot all night. But they would shoot the football scenes during the day. So I would go sleep for like 2 or 3 hours and then go to the B team and then shoot, put the mic on when the director wasn't there and shoot my own football scenes. Cause I didn't want nobody, I wanted it to be me. By doing that, I got the lion's share of the part, because the way Oliver Stone wrote the movie is that he wrote it for everybody's narrative. But since I would go to both, man, I was working like 18 hours a day, bro. But I wanted to get that football right. And they didn't know that I could really throw that thing, because I could throw the thing about 50, 60 yards in the air. Mm-hmm. So I was down there getting it, man, and it felt good. And it was like all that shit that we had in Texas, it all came into play. Yeah. Even when it came into, I said, hey, because sometimes they want to do a movie shit, like, I want you to drop back and then do a spin. I said, they don't do that in the NFL. Drop back, you got a certain amount of time. We got to get the shit off. Mm-hmm. And so by having that background, mm-hmm. it made it look authentic. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But
the one thing I did do, though, I took a hit. They was like, you want to take a hit? I said, motherfucker, I don't give a fuck, man. Shit, motherfucker, Texas, don't hit me, nigga. I don't give a fuck. You know what I'm saying? I ain't no motherfucking actor, nigga. I'm a real athlete, man. Just a little motherfucking safety. Came through my motherfucking, nigga, this part of my helmet, nigga. And I said, hey, man, anybody else hit me, they going to get fired. Don't hit me no more. That motherfucker put my shit back here. So, you know, and it was crazy because T.O. was on that motherfucker. Mm-hmm. And T.O. was a beast.
Hell yeah.
They told T.O. said line, because you know it was pro football players against Arena League guys. So T.O. was lining up all his DBs and said they could guard him. He was killing them. And at one point they ran a reverse for T.O. And he ran off the set. This motherfucker's so crazy. And the motherfucking dude with the camera said, can you keep up with him? I got him. Let's just tell him to go. I got him. That motherfucker took off. That motherfucker's running, pulled both his hamstrings, dog.
Tried to chase him down with the camera.
Motherfucker blew out on the tires of the freeway. Bah, bah. And they said, T.O., we're going to have you slow down. T.O. said, shit, y'all better speed this shit up.
You've played some amazing supporting roles leading up to, obviously, where you were the main star. You know, obviously, Any Given Sunday, you played alongside Will Smith and Ali, Tom Cruise and Collateral. Looking back on that, what does that mean to you, and what resonates the most about all that?
I always give props to Will Smith. He wanted me to play Bundini Brown and Ali. Muhammad Ali's a prophet. How are you going to be godson? Mm-hmm. As soon as you come out the garage, you'd be number two. But I wouldn't have had that opportunity had he not told the director, yo, I'm rocking with Fox, or I don't do the film.
Damn.
And so, yeah, it's big. And you know, that don't happen in Hollywood, man. Mm-hmm. You know, that don't happen in our business. So my main thing is that being those characters alongside those guys, I wanted to be that Scottie Pippen. I wanted to be that person, because I knew that if Will Smith is doing Ali, especially with the Ali, because it was so important, and Will was such a big star, and is such a big star, I was there to make sure that he didn't have to worry about what I was doing. This part of the movie is going to be solid. And you don't realize it, but you're hanging another character in the rafters. That's sort of like, if we're referring to basketball, all of my characters, when I look at them, man, if it's Wanda or Willie Beeman or Bundini Brown or all these characters, I hang them up. So whenever you get a chance to do the character on that type of level, I want to be able to look back at my career and say, mm-hmm. man, I turned into all these different mm-hmm. people and sold it. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, I take that and now to this day, man, in our business, you know, as much as you put into it, you can continue to work and continue to find shit. So I feel like I'm just still just getting started.
Is 42 too late to start an acting career?
Man, it ain't never too late, man. Yeah. Come on, man. Jack, what you want to do, man?
Yeah,
the movie starring Steven Jackson.
Save it, Jack.
I Make Love to Pressure.
Yeah, there you go. Are we going to have a segment for that at the end? So, yeah, hold on. We're going to get to that, definitely. I love hearing that. To me, it's hard to embody when you're playing a public figure or another famous figure. You were able to do it, obviously, with Ray Charles. You mentioned you're working on a Mike Tyson movie as well. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, man. Look, when I went on stage in the hood, a comedy act theater, right? I start killing as a young comedian, right? But one particular night, I'm on stage and I get to my Mike Tyson joke because that's my best joke. Everybody go crazy on that joke. And I get to that joke and I do it and nobody laugh. Mm. You know why?
He was in the building.
Because Mike Tyson's in the audience. Nigga. Niggas out here. The nigga said, some nigga in the back said, yo, Mike is in here. I said, oh, shit. And then everybody was like,
yo, Mike.
Stifle. And then the little black girl was in the front said, what you gonna do, Jamie? You scared? You gonna do your jokes? I'm like, bitch, shut up. Yo, this is when Mike was knocking motherfuckers out for just smiling and shit. And so I was like, damn. So then the dude yelled, I said, yo, Mike said, do the joke. And that shit better be funny.
Oh,
so the crowd
no.
went from looking at Mike and then looked at me. So I do the joke. You know, Mike Tyson, Kentucky Fried Chicken, whatever the joke was, right? I think I did the joke. The joke was Mike Tyson driving. No, it was me driving up to Kentucky Fried Chicken. And I said, I couldn't see, but I heard. And I thought Mike Tyson was working at Kentucky Fried Chicken. Because I heard, hi, welcome to Kentucky Fried Chicken, man. Take your order. And then so I was like, oh, shit. So standing ovation. And after that, Mike comes up to me and says, there he is, the crazy motherfucker, just punched me in the chest, like almost came me in. So I started hanging out with Mike. And bro, he was bigger than the world. Mm-hmm. He was bigger than all the Mikes. Mm-hmm. The dude had a Lamborghini truck. We'd be at the club, he'd see a girl, he'd be like, hey, you like BMWs? You like cars? You like Beamers? And I'm like, what? And he would go to a BMW shop, just buy one. I've watched Mike his whole career. And then I watched the good, the great, the bad, and the ugly, and now this Mike. And so I said, Mike, you have to let me embody you. You have to let me tell your story. And so now Martin Scorsese, wow. who hasn't done a boxing movie since Raging Bull, has agreed to take on the helm. And when we were talking about the movie, I said, what's interesting about Mike is not the ring now. It's the Mike that we see now. It's the Mike that when he lost it all, when I called Mike one time, I said, Mike, how you doing? And it's this voice, all praises to Allah, my brother, I'm just happy. I said, why are you happy? I'm happy, I don't have any money anymore. I don't have any money. I said, why you say that? Why does that make you happy? Because no one can take anything from me anymore. It's no vultures, nobody has to try to take anything from me. So I'm just happy. I said, that's the person we gotta show. The person who lived the life, and he'll tell you, I either live on top of the mountain or on the bottom of the ocean. I said, when we embody that, I said to Mike, when I play you, I'm gonna embody you so well that when I walk into your house, your kids will run up and say, Dad's home. So it's gonna be one of those deep. Ones. That's and deep. I'm telling you. And it's and you remember the I don't want to give too much of it away, but a lot of it, we bounce back and forth to the documentary of him being in the documentary. So when I strap that one on, that's going to be something.
That's going to be beautiful.
Man, I can't wait to see that.
When should we expect that in theaters, if theaters ever come back?
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is now, by having this lapse, it gives us a little bit of time to, like, correct some things that we want on the script so we be able to touch all those bases. But you're looking at 2021, the beginning of it, shooting it, and then possibly at the end of the year, unveiling it. So, look, man, I think Mike's, come on, man, that era and that time,
I can't wait to see it.
It's unprecedented.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it.
Let's talk a little. You touched on Ray Charles earlier, but being able to embody him the way you did, what kind of historical significance does that mean to you? Because he was so important to our culture as a whole, and for you to be able to embody that, how important was that to you?
I think it was super important because we don't always get a chance to tell our legend stories.
Right.
And so that was the first time we got a chance to see a legend in all of his glory, his good, his bad, and his ugly, and at the same time, present the music in a way to where the whole world was affected. I mean, and the backstory is that it was an independent film. So we got a little bit of the money from Phil Anschutz, who, you know, owns the Staples Center. But we had to prove to him that it was worth it. So at one point, we created the Sanger Theater in 1967, and we did Let the Good Times Roll. It wasn't in the movie, but we had to do it for the investors to let them see it. So we had a 30-piece orchestra. The investors walk in. The director says, hit it. And we go, boom. Hey, y'all, tell everybody. Boom. Ray Charles in town. Boom. Got a dollar and a quarter. Boom. Mm. And I'm just ready to clown. Don't let nobody play me cheap. I got 50 cents for all. Then I plan to keep to let a good time roll. Spent, spent, and obey. Spent, spent. And it don't matter if you're young or old. Just get yourself together and let the good time roll.
So that shit is fucking I go crazy. Up
a, oh, you are I go unbelievable, bro.
Oh, man. Steve. Then I go up to the investor and say, hey, yeah, I understand the big pocket of money is here.
You sold him.
And so we get the money. Had to sell it. And then once we do the movie, man, think about how the movie moved the culture. After the movie, Kanye West.
Yeah.
Kanye West, after the movie, Kanye West. I mean, because, like, going back to the parties that I was throwing, the way I met Kanye was at a party. Breon. Mm-hmm. Breon, that's why when people was looking at Breon dancing, he just don't dance. The motherfucker put shit together.
Yeah.
The motherfucker brought this, that same party that I was telling you about, the Jay-Z and everything. The next party, Breon says, I got this dude named Kanye West. I said, what's a Kanye West? He said, listen, I'm telling you, nigga, it's a motherfucker cold. So when Kanye came over, I said, Breon, what'd he do? He said, he rapped, he produced. I said, okay. So I walked up to Kanye. I said, hey, man, you know, when people come to my house, man, they got to perform, man. They say, you rap. This motherfucker freestyle some shit, Matt, Steve. I said, God damn, nigga, how come you ain't famous? He says, I'm trying to get on. Then he goes, I got this song that I think you'd be good on. I think you'd be good on this song. And so, well, what is it? I got a studio in the back. So we go in the back of my studio, and the motherfucker say the song go, she say she wants some Marvin Gaye, some Luther Vandross. I said, oh, shit. I said, I got it. So I start singing the shit all high and shit. He said, and this one I knew Kanye was boss. He said, what you doing? I said, well, I'm trying to put the R&B shit on it because you don't sing R&B. See, this, I'm putting the R&B. He said, don't do that. Just sing the shit regular. So when he said that, I thought like, oh, you know, song ain't going to make it. Next thing you know, Breon was like, remember that song you said you thought wasn't gonna make it? It's number one in the country. Mm. Fast forward, it's number one in the country. And then Ray Charles comes out. Breon hit me again, said, wake your ass up, wake your ass up, wake your ass up. He said everything three times. He said, get down here, Kanye got a missile. And this is after Ray Charles had came out. So I get to the studio and Breon said, just follow my lead, whatever you do, follow my lead. So we go in there and Kanye is playing the track to Gold Digger. Dunk, 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 dunk. I ain't saying she a gold digger. What? But she ain't missing. I said, oh shit. Breon hit stop on the record and said, that shit is whack unless you put Fox on that motherfucker. Mm. I said, Breon, what you doing? He said, nigga. He said, motherfucker, you know what I'm doing. Just get in the studio. So I get in the booth, bro. And we take over the session and we keep going over and over. I said, run it back. She said, nah, nah. Run it back in. I said, run it. And then the next thing you know, about an hour and a half, she take my money. Well, I'm in need. Yeah, she's a trifling friend indeed. Oh, she's a gold digger. Well, but sound that day zone. And the rest is history.
Legendary on,
classic.
Black Forrest Gump. Legendary.
Come on, man.
You 2006, heard it here first.
Facts. 2006 Grammy Award. Grammy Awards. You get a chance to perform "Georgia on My Mind" with Alicia Keys.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that.
At that point, man, you know, this is, you know, movies have a, it's like an, it opens up like a flower. So that's when the flower is full bloom. Now we get a chance to celebrate Ray Charles's music on the highest level with the incredibly talented Alicia Keys. Quincy Jones at the time was a conductor, which was beautiful. Mm-hmm. We had lost Ray Charles. Ray Charles had transitioned, but he got a chance to view the movie in his own way. And so here we are, you know, dual pianos with me and Alicia. And it was just great, man. She's amazing, so super talented. But there was one situation where I felt like the song, I felt like we were playing it, you know, straight, but I felt like we needed to put a little sauce on it because it's Alicia and it's myself. So it's like,
Georgia, Georgia, the whole day through, just like an old sweet song, Georgia on my mind,
right? And I said, Alicia, why don't we take a page from Biggie when we do the bridge? Boom, 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 boom.
Other arms reach out to me.
Boom, 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 boom. So we put a little thing in there just to sort of nod, you know, to the hip hop, to the youngness of it, yeah. And then, and I said, and when we doing it, boom, 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 boom. And I told the bass line to go, do-do-do-dum, do-do-do-dum, boom, 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 boom. So to be able to not only be in that moment, but do something a little special to nod to people out there who's, you know, the fans. It was dope, man. We got a standing ovation. And it was just another one of those things that you can hang up in the rafters and say, man, another moment.
Beautiful.
Following Ray Charles, that was such a big role. Were you picking your next projects carefully? Like, what changed after Ray Charles?
It was crazy, man. Like, Ray Charles is such a big film. And the Oscar and everything like that, I had to let the Oscar go. Mm. Because my people was like, oh, we only need to do Oscar things. I said, no. I want to go back to the funny. Mm-hmm. I want to stay funny. Matter of fact, I didn't even keep the Oscar with me because the Oscar has some kind of crazy power with it, bro. I can't explain it. You touch that shit and you start speaking in an English accent and shit. And, well, you know, when I started, my acting is smooth out there. I said, well, take this shit. So when you see people that win them Oscars and shit, that's a curse, bro. I said, I don't want that. I'm going to tell these jokes. I went on the comedy tour after that. I was at Madison Square Garden, and at that time, there was rumors that me and Oprah were in some type of relationship, which was funny. So I went on stage. I said, man, they say I'm dating everybody. Nah, man. But, but we was cool, and I did the joke. I said, they said I'm dating everybody. And so I said, so I'm laying in bed with Oprah. I leaned over to Gail and I said, hey, man, this is crazy, right? Hey, Stedman, give me some juice, right? Standing ovation. And I said, I think the joke was, if I wasn't make love to Oprah, she'd have a brand new episode of her favorite things. And I did the whole thing. Jamie, we got some Jamie love. Jamie love. Come get Jamie love.
Oh, shit. 2012, Django. How did that come about?
Yo, 2012, I had changed management. And literally, like, I heard about Django, man. I heard about Django from Tyler Perry. Mm. Tyler Perry was like, have you heard about this Django movie? I said, nah, man. He says, yeah, it's with Quentin Tarantino. I said, oh, that shit sounds crazy. So he was talking about it. And then Will Smith, and I was like, man, Will, you gotta do that shit. I said, motherfucker. He was like, well, he didn't know if he wanted to play a slave. I said, yeah, you're not a slave, you're a hero though. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so he passed. And then I seen the motherfucker, Idris Elba. I was at a show, I was doing a show, he came back and said, yeah, you heard this smoothie. This movie, Django, Quentin Tarantino. What's your thoughts? What's your thoughts on the movie? Quentin Tarantino, something about Django. You know? I was like, man, yo, good-looking black motherfucking ass better do that shit, man. I don't know, you know, just that
one more time. One more time. Do it again.
Quentin Tarantino doing his movie. You know, it's called Django. Yeah, no, what do you think? I said, man, yo, good looking motherfucking ass, you better do this shit, man. But for whatever reason, they all passed, and then I got a chance to come in and meet Quentin Tarantino. And the thing was, is that I you know, he never saw Ray. You know, so the way he saw Ray was that he was looking for wardrobe lady, and the wardrobe lady did Ray. So he watched it, had me come in, and I was already off script. I was already off book. Again, being prepared, man, being that sophomore in football, being ready. And I told him I know about the word nigga and all that. I understand what that was back then. Mm-hmm. And it's necessary to tell the story. So that don't bother me. I understand that. And then I told him, I said, well, here's the thing, though, dog. I got my own horse. And he said, you got your own fucking horse? I said, yeah, I got my own horse. What the fuck? fuck? I said, yeah, it's outside, bro. And I said, not only that, but your stunt horse looked just like my horse. We just got to paint the feet. Just paint the shoes white and we good. And so he was like, I've never in my entire fucking life heard of somebody bringing a horse. I said, I got my horse right outside, bro. Let's go. What we doing? And boom, I got on the movie, bro.
Damn. That's dope.
That's fucking dope. Yeah. Crazy.
No, and then when we got into the movie, man, you know, it was volatile, but it was a movie that for black and white folks, but it was the first time you saw a black character really be the hero, and that was all Quentin Tarantino. Mm. He really wanted that to happen. And when Django came out, man, you know, it was gangbusters. And it was like, you know, it moved the culture in a different way.
It shook them up, yeah.
And people didn't understand the history of Django. There have been Djangos made years back. Django was a character from Italy, from the spaghetti westerns. That's how you got Clint Eastwood.
Damn.
So when I did that version, bro, when I go to Italy or any of these places, I can't even walk the street because that was, their you know, shit. That was like the superhero. Yeah, so it all worked out.
That's beautiful. What was it like working with Leo? To me, one of the most underrated actors of our generation. What was it like being able to team up with him on that?
First of all, that's the homie, man. A lot of people don't know. Like, Leo's like a real, real dude. And you know, you don't have to, I don't validate nobody just because they into the culture. But, like, Leo stood in line for the Biggie album. Mm. Back in the day, his best friend is Q-Tip.
That say a lot.
Yeah, that's why in Wolf of Wall Street when he pop like it, that's really him. That motherfucker, like, he really on the shit. The motherfucker, does his thing.
He got some nigga in him.
Oh man, all the way. And the cool part about it was, you know, he knows the whole rap, all the scenario. Here we go, yo. One day I'm gonna get that motherfucker to do that shit, but. He's a real dude, and when he came onto the set, when we first did the read-through, he had problems with the word nigga, though. Because he would say it, and then he said, oh, pal, I can't say this. I just can't do it. And then Samuel Jackson goes, hey, motherfucker, it's just another Tuesday. Fuck these niggas. I was like, oh, shit. Motherfucker, say that shit. Motherfucker, say it. It's another motherfucking Tuesday. I was like, He had to really wrap himself into that character. And at one point, I pulled him to the side. I said, Leo, listen, I ain't your friend right now. We back in the day. Mm-hmm. And if we was back in the day, they would kill you hanging out with me, talking to me face to face. So you got to let that shit go. Man, the next day, that motherfucker came into the set. And I said, what's up, Leo? Leo, what's up? What's up? Didn't speak to me. When they say action, the motherfucker went in his bag. Mm. And that's one of the coldest performances. You check that performance out, and he talks about the performance. I won't say some of the private stuff that he talked about. I won't say who it is, but there was this black guy when he grew up, he used to hang out with. And so he mimicked that character for that movie, man. So powerful motherfucker, man. And when him and Samuel finally came onto the set, man, the motherfuckers walking in slow motion with their vapes and shit, man. Real Hollywood stars, all-star. Imagine an all-star. Mm-hmm. Samuel, Leo. Mm-hmm. I mean, them motherfuckers was going at it. So that's why that movie did what it did.
Beautiful thing. Speak to us a little bit about how important social justice and equality is to you in your life and you know, the role you played in bringing more attention on the Trayvon Martin situation.
Well, I mean, look, man, the one thing about social media, what it has done, it's pulled up the carpet. Mm-hmm. It lets us see something that we've known about for a long time. Right. The underground, the sincerity in the racism. Mm-hmm. Now it's wide open. Even if you look at today's world, what's going on right now, what happened to, I think the mayor of Georgia just posted something that was, you know, these terrible, terrible words, mm-hmm. that someone DM'd her.
I live out here in Georgia, yeah. And it's somebody called us some names, and she posted it to put them on blast, but to let you know that, you know, that ain't gonna stop up from what she's trying to do.
Yeah, and so now, like I said, we've known about this, mm-hmm. for all our lives. Now we're dealing with it face to face. So doing movies like Just Mercy with Michael B. Jordan, man, it's so important.
Great,
it's so
movie, important, man. Because.
Thanks, man. Thank you. And it's so important because, you know, Michael B. Jordan, what he's doing for the culture, man. Like when he did you know, when he did Fruitvale Station, mm-hmm. you know, like he started laying that narrative down. And even when he did Black Panther, he still had a narrative for us mm-hmm. that was, you know,
important,
highlighting us, important for us. So Just Mercy is just the evolution of that, you know, doing a movie to where we put the spotlight on a person who's wrongly accused of a rape and put on death row without a trial. And when we got into these roles, man, we knew we were doing something special and important.
Absolutely.
And because it sits home with me, man. You know, my pops, he was a coach at Lincoln High School, man. They put my pops in jail for $25 worth of illegal substance. They put him in jail for 7 years. Mm. Come on, man. Mm. This dude was an educator for 25 years in the hood. He would have kids at the school 7 days a week just so they wouldn't get shot or, right. or give them something to eat. So here they take this man who would bring the judge to the school, who would talk to the kids. You know, that very judge presided over his case, put him in jail with some of the kids wow. that he had taught. You feel what I'm saying, Steve? It's personal. And the thing is that I don't go visit nobody in jail, bro. I don't do that. I can't. And even with my pops, I said, I told him, I can't see you like that, man. I see you as a king. I can't mm-hmm. I can't see you like that. So I wrote him one letter. I said, when you get out, I'm going to save your life. And I fought them people. I fought them people for years. And, you know, they didn't understand that my pops, man, was so important to me. He made me rounded. Like, he showed me how to play tennis. Mm. I said, why are we learning what white people do? He said, because I want you to be able to go everywhere. So imagine me playing tennis with my pops, man, you know, in Texas. Couldn't play at the country club, but we was getting it in. So when he get out, man, this is 2001. He get out, I said, listen, I'm gonna save your life. You come live with me. He right over there right now. We've been here for almost 20 years.
Beautiful.
20 years now together, man. So
that's dope.
And so it's important that we keep that narrative, that we don't get exhausted. That's what's great about Bryan Stevenson. The lawyer that Michael B. Jordan played, he doesn't get exhausted. He keeps ringing the bell saying we have injustices. And injustice will always rear its ugly head in the most inopportune time. Look
facts,
at it now.
Facts.
We're dealing with COVID, and who's going to be the one who are going to suffer the worst?
Awesome.
We are, because of the injustice, because of the way we're structured in society. We don't have the health care. We don't, even when it comes to the money that they're giving out right now, what are black businesses gonna do? When you see everybody else sort of posturing to get the money, how do they get the money? So it's a whole lot of things that we touch on just by doing the movie, and we just have to keep it, we have to keep it going. Our art is our way to crack that code, is our way to open people's eyes. And I think, you know, like, we'll continue to do that.
Continuing to be great is the only way, because we move, we set culture, we move culture, we shift culture, we are culture. So that's the only way to continue.
And I appreciate you, Matt. Like, sometimes I've heard you speak, man. I heard you speak about a situation. I don't want to go into it now, but I heard you speak about a situation where you said, no, we don't have to live like that no more.
Mm-hmm.
We have our own voices.
Okay.
And I thought what you and Steven do, man, like, I don't even think y'all know, but it means so much because you keep it real, but at the same time, there's a level of intelligence and a level of I'm black and I'm proud to it. That makes us feel good about it. You know what I mean?
Man, thank you. Yeah. That means a lot, especially coming from you, bro. We appreciate that.
Oh, for sure.
What actor filmmaker should we have on our show? Now, listen, before you answer this question, whoever you say, whoever the answer is, and you have that connect, which I'm sure you do, you got to connect them.
You know everybody.
Yeah. You know everybody. So who do you think should be a guest on our show?
You should have Leo, man.
Ooh.
You should have
Kirby.
Leo.
Yes, I'm glad you said that. That's the homie.
Not only that, there was a Black Honors, and he came out and gave me the award, man. And I explained to Leo. I said, Leo, it's not that we're looking for validation, but when people like yourself lend yourself or give your energy to us,
Gus,
it goes
alone.
Everywhere.
It means a lot,
and,
dog.
And he's a sports head. You gotta have him because he's a sports head. And I guarantee you, I work on him, man. But he's a dope motherfucker.
Love that.
But that's the same way we feel
Who's
about you coming
actor,
on our
actress.
Show, bro. You don't know what you're doing for our show, so.
Hell yeah.
Oh,
hell
come
yeah.
On, man. I appreciate this,
man. We appreciate
man.
It, man. Hell yeah. Good call, Jack. Who's an actor or actress you haven't worked with yet that you would like to?
Denzel. I want to work with D.
Man,
back to the party. I threw a party here, different kind of party where we featured D. D came to the party, sat at the table, And he just broke it down. Like all the actors and actresses were here, and he was just giving us the keys, you know, to, you know, to how to, you know, make shit right, you know, in the business, you know how you talk, you know, of course you got to do your thing, you know, whatever, you know, boom, you know, motherfuckers doing that shit. But he was breaking shit down so incredible for us. I said, man, I got to work with him because I know when you work with him, you're going to elevate.
Brings out your greatness.
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Okay. Mm-hmm. My nigga.
My
nigga.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because right. we had a mariachi band for him. He said, I said, yo, D, we got a mariachi band for you. You got a mariachi band? All right. Okay. Mariachi. Okay. You got a mariachi band. All right. Uh-huh. Okay.
My shit. Nigga. That's funny as hell.
Hey, what's your favorite TV series? Recent.
Favorite TV series of all time? Sanford and Son.
Ooh. Oh, man. I'm watching that. I watch that every day. I'm sorry. I'm with
you
on
bro,
that.
I watched that shit, bro. Like, I was watching that shit the other day when the motherfuckers, the TV got stolen and shit. Just classic, man. That's my shit.
One of the greats. You mentioned early on in the 90s, everyone was around. You were around everyone. Any cool Biggie or Pac stories?
Mm. Oh, man, shit. Tupac used to just be out. I remember one time we was at the Comedy Store. We was looking at Pac. But we didn't look at him like Tupac. It was like, right. That's, you know, fly nigga.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody pulled a gun out. Nigga. Somebody pulled a gun out the Comedy Store and shot that motherfucker. We was like, ah! And so just running down the street with Tupac.
That's crazy.
You know, when you think back about it, it was crazy. And then, you know, we would see him out. And I remember that night, the night he passed away. I remember him, like, it was so crazy, man. Like, in the argument with these guys, and he was like, Pac, man, fuck them niggas, man. These motherfuckers, it ain't worth it. It ain't worth it, whatever. And I was living in Vegas at the time. And then that night, man, mm-hmm. you know, unfortunately, the whole world stopped, man. Nice. And I remember walking into the MGM Grand, and MC Hammer walked up to me and said, man, he gone. Mm. And this was early. He was like, stop, man, cut that bullshit, man. We just seen him. So unfortunately, you know, that story, but just to be able to know Tupac. I remember mm-hmm. How he was so nice to my mom. Like,
wow.
We were at this thing called the Urban League, right? You know, some guys was chirping at him. He was like, oh, but he turned around and saw my mom and was so gracious, man. And was like, how you doing, sweetheart? You know, so mannerable and so cool. So I don't know, man. It's surreal that he's gone and things like mm-hmm. that. But those used to be the homie. Then he came and did it in Living Color.
Yep.
He came and did it in Living Color. Mm-hmm. And when he came, man, it was just like, you know, you didn't realize that these were going to be moments that would last forever in time and be very significant because he wouldn't be here. But just happy-go-lucky fun. And just so sad, but at the same time, beautiful to be able to have those moments.
Absolutely.
What's your favorite sports moment?
LeBron James coming back 3-1.
Yeah, that's big. Mm. That's big. That's big.
That was big. That was big. That's
a big moment in history.
If you can sit courtside at any game in NBA history, what game would it be?
Oh, it would be... Damn. It would be 80. When was Magic Johnson?
Mm-hmm.
When he hit the hook.
Is that 87?
That's the Celtics.
87? Is that 87?
86, 87?
Yeah. 87.
Yep. God almighty, bro.
Beautiful.
You want to talk about beauty, poetry, emotion. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget that. And what's crazy was I was in college and me... And my roommate, you know, he was white from like from Oklahoma, and you know we wasn't tripping on the teams because you know I was a Maverick fan, but at the same time, we just automatically started rooting. He said, come on. I was like, come on. I said, come on, Magic. Next thing you know, we got on Laker jerseys, whatever like that, and just to see that shit play out like that, bro. Mm-hmm. Just amazing. I would love to sit course out there.
That's history. Your favorite impersonation. Yeah, your favorite impersonation. Give us that character real quick. Who's your favorite person to... Celebrity.
Damn.
Favorite celebrity to mimic.
The favorite... shit. There's so many. Like,
I know he do damn near everybody.
It's got to be Mike Tyson right now.
All right, so we at the begging segment, right? This is a part of the segment where, you know, we all fans of all our guests and some things we want to ask for. So this is
Mike. Sure.
Matt, are you involved today, Matt?
No, I just want to be on set.
All right, cool. So bam, Matt is helping me launch my acting career because he's going to be behind the camera, you know what I'm saying, doing a lot of stuff.
So, hell yeah.
So not only do I want to be on set one of your movies and kind of learn from you and kind of see how you move around and how you get into character, but I also, if you have something going on, let your boy get a cameo or something, man.
Cameo.
Got it. I got it already.
Texas boys, we got to hold each other down, man.
Jack, listen, we going to hold each other down. Jack, listen, this is what we're going to do, Jack. I got a new TV show on Netflix.
Ooh.
It's called Dad Stop Embarrassing Me. And it's about me and my oldest daughter, all the shit that we done went through, from the boys to the drinks, to everything. So we just sold it. We shot just before we went down. Bro, you gotta come on.
Man, that's dope, man. I appreciate it.
Yo, I'm serious, Jack.
I'm serious, Jack. I'm coming.
Come on, man. We gotta make that shit, man. Yeah. That shit be good.
I make love of the pressure, man. Hey, Matt. I'm finna go get some real lessons, baby. Yeah. Get ready.
Bro, we gotta put it in the script of where you have to say that. So, damn, are you nervous? I make love of the pressure,
man. I make love of the pressure, motherfucker. Yeah, I like that.
Hey, man, well, Jamie, thank you for your time, man. We really appreciate it. It means a lot to us. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, guys, man.
Thanks for your time.
You guys keep
inspiring,
baby.
Thank you, man. Hey, that's a wrap. Man, amazing episode with our brother Jamie Foxx. You can catch this on Showtime, Basketball, YouTube, or all platform streaming podcasts.
All of them.
You have a call from an inmate at Williamson County Jail.
What's up, bro?
Did you do it?
What?
Did you do it?
In the state of Texas, there is no bigger community activity than high school football.
It's Friday Night Lights.
Greg was one of the best football players. He's smart, athletic.
The momentum he had is unlike most students ever experience.
I got a text message with Greg Kelly's photo, and it just said, "Do you know this kid?"
There was a crime committed, according to this 4-year-old boy.
I just turned numb. Like, this can't be true. This can't be true.
And that's when a second victim came forward.
We, the jury, find the defendant, Gregory Kelly, guilty of the offense.
This trial was a sham.
There's been an outcry. Everyone's saying, you got the wrong guy.
That could have been me. That could have been any of us.
They've built him up to be angelic. Then you fast forward to the search warrants, and you get a different picture.
Did you ever have you take a lie detector test?
Yeah. I've passed every question but one.
We've been on this journey to try to figure out what the truth is. And it's proven difficult at every turn.
Initially, I was pretty convinced of his innocence. Now I wouldn't be surprised either way.
This life was all I ever wanted.
I'm not leaving. Not yet.
I was hoping you'd say that.
Gotta hit the streets, make some money.
People like us must destroy people like him. Buckle up.
Get Showtime free at Showtime.com.